Okay, morning. Give everyone a second to settle in. Chodesh Tov. Good Chodesh. We are on Kuf Chav Tes Amud Aleph, and that's not particularly good. We should be on Daf Kuf Lamed. So over the course of this morning, we are going to try to make up some ground. The end of the 18th parak of Shabbos deals with Hakazas Adam, the halachas of Hakazas Adam. So you're going to be hearing me speak about bloodletting. As I already introduced yesterday, so we're going to go right into it. And then today's daf is really daf Kuf Lamed, and today's really the beginning of Rav Elazar d'Amila. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to rush to the end of the parak, and then finish the parak and slow down once we get to the new parak. We were speaking yesterday about this idea of Hakazas Adam. In the good old days, that was therapy. Therapy was bloodletting. By going to an expert bloodletter, who, by the way, probably was also your barber. And in fact, I don't just say that. Meaning there are sources that suggest that they're one and the same. So to go to your resident bloodletter and to have him remove some blood from you was extraordinarily therapeutic, but it was a dangerous therapy. It was a therapy where you put yourself now in a delicate and fragile situation where there are certain things that you have to try to avoid when bloodletting. Okay, we're going to go through all this inside in the Gemara, so let's begin. We are at the two dots now. Last thing we mentioned yesterday is what you should be eating right after you let blood. So should it be meat? Should it be red wine? Machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. That was the last thing we saw yesterday. Now, Kuf Chav Tes Amud Aleph at the two dots. About three quarters down on the Amud. First word in the line is Shmuel. Shmuel b'yom David Milsa. So Shmuel on the day where he was bloodlet. Now, of course, he was going to go through that therapy. He's a physician. He felt it was extraordinarily therapeutic. So Abdulei Tafshil Tachle. So what he would do is they would have a spleen cooked for him, and he would eat cooked spleen on the day of his bloodletting. Rav Yochanan Shasi Adenafik Tave Meone. Rav Yochanan would be drinking red wine to the point and where the smell of it actually came out of his ears. Rav Nachman Shasi Ad Kafi Tachle. Rav Nachman would be drinking red wine until his spleen would be drowning in the red wine. Rav Yosef Shasi Ad Nafik Marvisa Dekul Silsa. Rav Yosef, after he would bloodlet, so he would continue to drink wine until the smell came out of his puncture. Meaning, obviously, they had a needle, and I cannot imagine it's as thin as the needles they are nowadays, but they had a needle going in order to extract the wine, and just me even thinking about it makes me weak and dizzy, but shows you how brave I am when it comes to these things. So but nevertheless, he would drink to the point in which the blood would come actually out of the puncture wound. Rava Mahadar Chamer Batasa Tarfe. Now, Rava, what he would do is he would go after wine that was 3 leaves old. Now, if that doesn't make sense to you, that's fine, because that's literally what the Gemara translates. I take a look at Rashi. Rashi suggests it's talking about where it's 3 years old. Now, even Rashi is a little bit difficult to understand, because we know that after the vine is planted, it's Arla for the first 3 years. So, okay, there's a little bit more to discuss over here. But in the meantime, however, in other words, vintage wine would be therapeutic in terms of his bloodletting. The Gemara talks about how important it is to make sure that you eat and drink well after you bloodlet. I beg of you, he says. Now, what I want you to do is after your bloodletting, I want you to go. I want you to go home and tell your wives that Rav Nachman is coming over for a meal. Not because I really am, but in other words, make sure that they cook well, so that when you go home, you won't have just your regular meal, but you'll have a very substantial meal on the way home from after you come home from bloodletting. Deceiving your wife, telling her that guests are coming when they're not actually coming. Now the Gemara is going to discuss this very issue, not the specific example of deceiving your wives, but under certain circumstances, a little deception is okay. Rumi asire. Generally speaking, deception is prohibited, bar mehaya rama deshare. This deception is permitted, and that is mandavin milsa velo afshalei lishkol. I'm sorry, velo afshalei. So let's say you bloodlet, and now you don't have money. In other words, you just can't afford. So what do? Lishkol zuze macha. So you do is take a bad coin, and lezo l'shev chanusa, and go to 7 different stores. Now, the way it works normally is that you go to a store and you are going to purchase some wine, but they allow you to try some wine before you purchase the wine. Okay? And so what you do is you go to every store and you say, I'd like to purchase some wine, and he gives you a little taste, and you put down your coin, and he looks at the coin, and he says, no, that's not going to do it. Ad the time shir reviyasa. And then you can keep going from store to store to store until you eat a reviyas of wine. V'ilo, now if this is not available, now I know it's very strange, meaning, gnevas das, meaning we've spoken about this before, that you're not allowed to deceive people, you're not allowed to go in a store and say, I'm interested in it, in buying something when you're not interested in buying something, but this is for the purposes of remedy and healing. And is that normally enough justification in order to allow deception? So normally I would say no, but the Gemara says in this circumstance, it would be okay. The Gemara says, now what if that's not available to you? So what do you do? V'ilo lechoshev tamar uchmasa. So eat 7 black dates. V'leishav mishcha b'tzada. Apply a little bit of oil to your temples, to your forehead. V'nigne b'shimsha, and lie down in the sun. And so that would be a way of warming up the body. Again, all this idea of the eating of the meat and drinking of the wine, and in other words, because as we discussed yesterday, when you bloodlet, so you're basically putting yourself in a delicate situation. In fact, the Gemara said yesterday, you have a chill, you have like a body temperature that went down, and so this is all trying to get you back up to your regular core temperature. Avlet Ashkechal Shmuel Degana B'Shimsha. Now, Avlet, don't know much about him. But he apparently Shmuel didn't like him that much. That's certainly what it seems from the context of the story. Avle Ashkech and Shmuel deganu b'shimsha. So he sees Shmuel lying down in the sun. Amle Chachim Adi Yudai. So he says, they say you're such a smart Jew, but I don't understand. Bisha mihavitava. Can you turn something bad into good? Meaning lying down in the sun, that's not good for you, right? Skin cancer and the like. You're not allowed to just simply lie down in the sun. Yuma dehakazahu. And so Shmuel, in explanation, says, well, I just bloodlet today, and so therefore I'm cold, and therefore I'm sitting in the sun to warm myself up. That was what he told Avli. And the Gemara is about to tell us. That wasn't it. Meaning that wasn't why he was lying down in the sun. Velohi. Elika Yuma de Malembe, Shimsha Bekule Shasa, Yuma de Naflabe, Tkufas Tamuz. So the Gemara says that there's one day in the year which lying down in the sun is beneficial, and that is Yuma de Naflabe, Tkufas Tamuz, when we begin the season of Tamuz. Season of Tamuz means when we begin the summer season. So that on that day, that's when it's beneficial to lie down in the sun. Now, by the way, you should just know that before you try this at home, we have another gears in the Gemara, which is not Tkufas Tamuz, but Tkufas Teves, and that would be the beginning of the winter season. Okay, so obviously it makes a big difference whether it's the beginning of winter or the beginning of the summer. Either way, Shmuel knew, look, he was not only a physician, but he was an astronomer and an astrologer, as we'll talk about later today. So whatever the day was, he knew that there was one day that was beneficial lying down in the sun, and for reasons which the Gemara does not tell us, he did not want to give over this information to Avlate, and that's all we have going, that's all I know in terms of the Gemara. V'savar lo igalei, and he didn't want to tell him. The Gemara continues, Rav Shmuel Dami Tavar Kol HaMekel B'Studas HaKazas Da Makil Lom Mezonosav Neshamayim. If you do not take care of yourself specifically, if you do not feed yourself after Hakasas Adam properly, Kadosh Baruch Hu will have no rachmanis for you. Very important. The Gemara is basically telling us you got to take care of yourself. Meaning Hashem, of course, will take care of you, but you got to show a little bit of initiative and a little motivation, and you got to take care of yourself. V'omrim hu al chayav lo chas echas ani chas alav. If he's not ready to take care of himself, so I'm ready to take care of himself. If after you bloodlet, do not go and sit in a windy space, in a windy spot, because it may empty out the bloodletter, meaning you already are deficient in blood, and now you're out in a spot where you may bleed a little bit more, it's windy. I'm not really sure. You'll get hit. You'll get hurt. However, it's going to work. But you're going to let out a little more blood, and that's not going to be good. Amokim lay arevisa. You're really down to your last pint of blood. I say pint. I don't mean I'm not really quantifying, but basically, you're really at a, you're at your minimum threshold. And the wind's going to blow and push out, just drain you just of a little more blood, and that's not going to be good. So you got to be in a very calm place after your bloodlet with no wind. Shmuel, after he bloodlet, he would be sure to be in a airtight room. A room that was 7.5 layers thick, made of brick. So one day, after bloodletting, he went into what he thought was an airtight room, and argish benafshe. He felt a little weaker than he normally does. He checked the walls. The walls were not 7.5 brick thick, but it was actually missing a layer. And so he felt it. He literally felt it. He was that sensitive. So the Gemara says that after you bloodlet, you got to eat, and then only then do you go out. So the problem is that, let's say after bloodletting, you the first thing you encounter is a dead body. That's not going to be good, because it's going to be very uncomfortable. It's going to be very unpleasant. Your face is going to turn green, horrified by that scene. And again, you don't have enough blood in your body to really combat it. So you got to make sure the first thing you do is eat. Or let's say you meet a murderer. Now you're going to meet a murderer, and that's going to scare you. And in this case, it's going to scare you to death. You're already at a deficiency in terms of blood, and then any type of emotional reaction, then the Gemara says that's no good. And e paga b'davar acher. Or let's say you meet up with a pig. So the Gemara says, kashla davar acher. So you're going to get saras. Right? Rashi quotes the Gemara in Kedushin, how one affects the other. The Gemara here speaks, of course, euphemistically. It says davar acher. But Rashi basically explains that if you meet up with a pig after having bloodlet, so then you're going to be extraordinarily open and subject to a lot of illnesses and diseases. And the Gemara here speaks about saras. Okay. So you should wait a moment. I said lishte. I misspoke. Lishe. You should wait a little bit, and then afterwards you should get up. Five things are very, very dangerous practices and are karav lamisa. Accelerate death. Achal va'amad, standing up right after you eat. Don't do that. Shasa va'amad, standing up right after you drink. Don't do that. Yashan va'amad, getting up right after you sleep. You should first wake up, spend a moment in bed, then get up. Hikizdam va'amad, bloodletting and getting right up. Don't do that. So in other words, you should be lying down and then get up. Shemish mitasa va'amad, and having relations with one's wife and then getting up right afterwards. Again, don't do that. Amar Shmuel. Pursa didama kol talsin yoma. Now, what's the schedule? Meaning, how often should you bloodlet? So Shmuel tells us once a month. Every 30 days, you should go for bloodletting. That should be your general schedule. Obeina parakim. Now, what happens when you get to the next stage of life? Now, right, we're all curious. What does that mean? What's the next stage of life? So Rashi says, pirkish no safki go lachem emshana. After 40 years of age now, you moved on to the next stage of life. You're no longer a young man. You're a man now in your 40s. So yimat. So now, not as frequently. Okay, and what does that mean, not as frequently? If you take a look at Rashi again. Rashi yimat bakazalai kaz b'chol chodesh ala lebeis chadashim. Every other month. Okay. Ubeina prakim yachzor v'yimat. Now when you get to the next stage of life, so then even less frequently. I know we're all with bated breath. When is that? Next stage of life. So Rashi says, la'achar shishim. So once you turn 60 years of age, now you've entered your next stage of life. So then, yakiz legimel chadashim. And then Rashi goes on to explain, so that's once every third month. Lefi, I'm reading Rashi. Lefi shein kocho ala ve'in damo cham v'gufa mitzanein kishe mechzar damo. So Rashi says what happens is, as you get older, your body temperature goes down. You're not as strong, so therefore you cannot handle the bloodletting with such frequency. So once a month up to 40, once every other month up to 60, after 60, once every third month. Okay, four times a year.
It's interesting. Steinfeld says when you turn 50, and using that calculation, that goes to 120.
I was also trying to do the math for Rashi, meaning...
Yeah, but after the 40th decade.
I see.
40, 80,
120. That works a little bit better than... Arba umale shabasa. Avashen v'chemishila. Okay, so, when exactly should you be going for this bloodletting? So, Sunday would be good, Wednesday would be good, Friday would be good, but Monday and Thursday would not be good. The Amar Mar Mishishlo Zechus Avos Yaki Zamashin v'chemishi shabasin in shamala v'shamata shaven ke'echa. So, and the problem is the Monday and Thursday, of course, based in convenience. And... Torah reading, based in convenes, long tachanun, meaning what is that all about? That's all about the fact that based in convenes. Now, based in convenes was a Takanas Ezra. Rashi quotes here the Gemara Baba Kama. Gemara Baba Kama tells us that one of the Takanas of Ezra Hanavi was that based in would convene on Monday and Thursday. And just like based in convenes, based in Shalmata convenes down here on this earth, based in Shalmala also convenes as well, meaning it's a mirror image of one another. So based in convenes, convening on Monday and Thursday, and you don't have Chosavos, which, it's interesting, the Gemara says, well, who doesn't have Chosavos? Okay, the Gemara assumes that there are people out there who do not. So then you can't bloodlet on Monday and Thursday. It's the don't do it, meaning, so there's extra din, there's extra justice on Monday and Thursday, so do not bloodlet on Monday and Thursday. Good. So, okay, but in other words, but the days that were suggested were Sunday, Wednesday, and Friday. What happened to Tuesday? Well, Shabbos, of course, we understand, Shabbos, Shabbos. You're not going to bloodlet, but what's wrong with Tuesday? But Tosa B'Shabbos, the my time alone. So the Gemara says like this, Mishum Dekayim Alei Madin Bezaveh Bezugeh. Okay, so the Gemara explains like this. Now, the Gemara doesn't do much in terms of explanation, but basically like this, a little bit of astronomy, and just a little bit, because really we have today's daf is daf kuf lamed, but just a little bit. So there are seven celestial bodies that are visible to the naked eye. Two of them are the sun and the moon, and then there are five planets. Now, there are more than five planets that are orbiting, but five planets that are invisible to the naked eye. Mars, Mercury, Saturn, Venus, and Jupiter. Okay, so all of them are visible. So anyone who want to take out their old astronomy books, not astrology, astronomy books, and you can actually see these planets going through the sky at night. Now, there is obviously a tremendous number of stars, but those stars are fixed, meaning that they do not move. All those stars, I mean, as the Earth moves, our perception of the stars is that they move, but they're fixed in place, as opposed to the planets, the sun and the moon, they move around within the constellations. Okay. And that's just the beginning of a discussion. Now, the way that it operates, and this is all supernatural, this is all metaphysical, this is not, none of this is perceived by us, but is that they work in a certain sequence. Rashi provides a sequence. Shabtai, Tzedek, Madim, Chama, Noga, Kochav, and Levana. Okay, that's the sequence, and they work, and they operate on an hourly basis, so that every hour, one of these planets are going to have dominion over this world. Now again, Ein Mazal Yisrael, we're above it all, meaning the Jewish people are above it all, but in ways in which the Gemara assumes, and most Rishonim understand, is that these bodies, these celestial bodies, have a control over this earth based on that sequence. Now, when does the sequence begin? So Rashi points out it begins on Wednesday, because that's when the sun, the moon, and the stars were affixed on Wednesday of Ma'aseh Bereishis. Okay, now, if you work with this sequence, and you basically go forward, so you will find that what happens is the following. So, and by the way, in other words, it's seven celestial bodies in total, the five planets and the sun and the moon, and so, now, there are 21 hours in the day, so obviously every day is going to start with a new celestial body, but by the time you get to roll around an entire week, because there are 7 days in the week, 24 hours a day, so that's going to be perfectly divisible, so that when you start once again on Wednesday, you're back to your original celestial body. Okay, you're back to tzedek. With all that stated, so it comes out now that on Tuesday, so...
two or three o'clock.
Right. So the Tuesday. So the Mars, the Mars domination is going to take place during an even hour, of the day. Now, what's wrong with being an even hour? So the Gemara Pesachim tells us that we're not into even numbers. Odd numbers we're okay with, but we're not good with even numbers. Do you want a better explanation? Good. Go to somebody else for a better explanation. But the Gemara Pesachim is worried tremendously about zugos. Why does it come up in the Gemara Pesachim? Because the Gemara is bothered by the fact that there's a mitzvah de Rabbanan to drink 4 cups of wine on Pesach. 4, that's an even number. So how do we do that? So the Gemara's answer is very simple. Pesach is different. Lel Shimurim. We have extra protection on Pesach. We don't need to worry about zugos. The pairs on Erev Pesach. Good. But over here, however, there is a concern. It's just a regular weekday. And Ma'adim, and Mars falls out on a regular weekday. Now Mars, Ma'adim, Kishmo Kachu, that's as the name indicates. So that's red. So to bloodlet, when Mars falls out at an even hour, which occurs on Tuesday, that's no good. Okay, now, Nami Kaima, now the Gemara says, Mali Shabbat Nami Kaima Bezuzi. Now, if you're following the chart well, so you'll see that on Friday also. So Mars comes out on an even hour. So the Gemara says, you're right. And really, bloodletting should not be allowed on Friday, but we do it. Shomer Pesayim Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu washes over foolish people. Excuse me. And in this regard, we're foolish. I'm Shmuel Dalid, Duhu Dalid. The fourth day of the week, which falls out on the fourth day of the month, Dal Du Arbase, or fourth day of the week that falls out on the 14th day of the month, Dal Du Esrim Barba, or the fourth day of the week that falls out on the 24th day of the month, Dal Dalek Arba Basrei, or fourth day of the week that falls out without 4 days remaining in the month, Sakanta. So that, he explains, is dangerous. So, you got to take a lot of things into account before you bloodlet. Meaning, not only do you have to make sure that you have food, but you got to look at the calendar and make sure that it is not a calendrically challenging day. Rabbi Rosh Chodesh Hasheni Lo Chulsha. How about Rosh Chodesh? No. How about the second day of the month? No. Chulsha Shlishi Lo Sakana. Hasheni Lo Chulsha Shlishi Lo Sakana. So days 1 and 2 are no good. Day 3 is a real danger. Okay, so not the end of the month, not the beginning of the month. Mala Yumatava Chulsha. Now on erev Yontiv, also no good. Now, by the way, in other words, Friday we already talked about. Friday was fine, right? Friday in general was a good day, even though Mars comes out on an even hour. But Friday would be good. But erev Yontiv, no. Erev Yontov, no. So, Da'atzrasa Sakanta. Now, the Gemara points out that really the worst of them is Erev Shavuos. Erev Shavuos is the worst of the Erev Yontovs. The Gazer Rabbanan, Akula Mala Yom Tov, Amishum Yamatav Da'atzeres. And so, once Erev Shavuos becomes a absolutely forbidden day to bloodlet, so what the Chachamim did is they basically made a Gzera any Erev Yontov. The Nafik Beziku Shmei Tavuch, and the Gemara goes on to explain, what's so bad about Erev Shavuos? So the Gemara says, because there's a wind. The wind has a specific name to it. It's called Tavuach. Dilokab, we saw Torahs have a Tavach Leila Besarayu L'damayu. Because it was ready to destroy the Jewish people. Because on Shavuos, we know that there is, we reached a critical moment in world history where we were offered the Torah, and if we did not accept the Torah, so then the world would be destroyed. You want to take a look at Rashi and Brashis and Yom HaShishi. Rashi over there discusses the same basic idea. So on Erev Shavuos, you can't bloodlet because that's the day in which it is a very dangerous day. Okay. Amar Shmuel, Achol Chita V'Kizdam Lo V'Kizel Lo So Chita. Now, what about eating before you bloodlet? So the Gemara doesn't recommend it. The Gemara says that's not so good because all you're doing is just basically reducing the weight that you just ingested. Now, I know one is food and the output is blood, but the Gemara basically says it's no. The Hani Mila L'Refuah. Now, the Gemara points out, now, that's if you want a bloodlet for medicinal purposes, for therapeutic purposes. Avala Akule, but let's just say you feel bloated and you're bloodletting just simply to feel a little lighter. So the Gemara says, L'Akule, Mekel, Amekes, Mekel. So the Gishkar, thank you. So the Gemara says that to be lenient. To be lighter would be fine. Hamekes dam shtia la'alter achila ad chatzi mil. So the Gemara says, now once you bloodlet, so you should drink immediately, but in terms of eating, wait about 9 minutes. So the Gemara now wonders, now in terms of eating 9 minutes after bloodletting, what if I eat later than 9 minutes? Is that bad or is it just neutral? Teiku, the Gemara says, I don't know. What about eating beforehand? Is that going to be bad or is that going to be neutral? Take what the Gemara says, I don't know. Machriz Rav. Now Rav made the following declaration. Mea kare bezuza. Now if pumpkins are, let's say, really cheap in the market, so there's a tremendous sale going on for one suz, you can buy 100 pumpkin. Okay. I mean, pumpkin. But in other words, but if you get 100 of them for them one suz, that's fine. Mea resha bezuza. Now what if they're selling animal heads? Now again, animal heads. But if you can get 100 of them for a zuz, the Gemara says that's great. Meis sefame veloklum. But what about lips of animal? Okay, again, doesn't sound that appetizing. I'm not particularly that interested. But in other words, the butcher selling the lips of the animal. So the Gemara says, I don't care what kind of discount you're getting. I don't care what kind of deal, what kind of sale it is. It's never worth it. Meaning there's no nutritional value in the lips of an animal. And the Gemara says, just don't waste your time, don't waste your money. I'm Rav Yosef Ki Avinim Bei Rav Huna. Rav Yosef says, now I understand. Because I was in the yeshiva of Rav Huna, or in the house of Rav Huna, so, the Mefagre Bei Rabbanan, and what were the rabbis doing on a particular day? Nothing. The right Rashi writes, that you a Talmidim mit atzlim, melavo beveis medrash. The students, they weren't coming to the Beis Medrash. Amri ha'ina yuma desaf mehu. And what was Rav Huna's retort? What was his remark? He says, you know what this is? It's lip day. And I had no idea what he was talking about, but now I get it. In other words, because the lips of an animal have no value, no nutritional value, Rav says, when you're in the market, and even if they're giving out for free, it's worthless. So, well, you know, what's worthless worth? Exactly. V'lo yadana ma'kami, and I didn't know what he was saying, but now I understand what he was saying, meaning that the rabbis are coming to the Beis Medrash, but they're not coming and there's no learning going on. That's as much value as the lips of an animal. Now I get it. The Koshrin Hatibor. And finally, one last word of halacha before we go on to the next perek, and that is, we talked about delivering a baby, which we learned yesterday, you're allowed to deliver a baby on Shabbos, even though it involved Chilul Shabbos, but you deliver the baby. So, Koshrin Hatibor. So, what about the umbilical cord? So, there was a machlokis in the Mishnah, whether you tie the umbilical cord, or you cut the umbilical cord. Tana Rabbanan the Gemara, here, of course, in Tosefta. Koshrin Hatibor of Yossi, Omer Avchotchin, V'tomnin Ashaya K'dei Shiyachim Havlad. So what do you do is that you cut. And not only that, but you insulate the shalya, the placenta, so that the child will be warmed up. Now exactly what process do you use to warm up the baby? So depending on your socioeconomic. If you are benos malachim, so the baby gets warmed up in a bath of oil. Benos ashirim, besafugim, shel semer. Wealthy people in wool and tufts of wool, benosaniyim, bemuchin, and poor people get warm up their babies in muchin. Tufts of, I don't know, just very cheap material. Okay. Right. Not fine wool, but very coarse wool. And nowadays, of course, the babies are put under the warmers. So, Amarav Nachman, Amarav Baravu, Amarav Halach, Rav Yossi. Now the Gemara comes to a very clear conclusion, which is that the halacha follows like Rav Yossi, which is that you're allowed to cut the umbilical cord. Amarav Nachman, Amarav Baravu, Amarav Modim Chacham, Rav Yossi, Betipa Shoshay, Shnei Tinokos, Shechotchen. Now, if it is twins, so then you for sure can cut the umbilical cord. My tama de menaschei adade, because with twins, they could be that the umbilical cord of one will adversely affect the other. So there's not even a debate. Everyone agrees. Even the chachamim would agree that you're allowed to cut the umbilical cord. The only reason why the chachamim on a single birth says that you can't cut the umbilical cord is because it could wait till after Shabbos. It will not be threatening to the child. Again, the Gemara says that the halacha is like Rav Yossi. So, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Baravu, Amar Rav Kol Amar Beparshas Tochacha Osan Lachai BeShabbos. Anything mentioned in the Tochacha can be done to a child on Shabbos. Meaning, obviously, if it's in Tochacha, it means it's adverse. So that means that on Shabbos for a baby, it would serve as therapeutic to the baby, and therefore you could do it. Shenamar Umalatcha b'yom halata uschalo karata sarchal v'mayim lo rechatzal l'mashar v'amelach lo himlachta v'hatchel lo hichalta. That is the pasuk out of Yecheskel describing Tochacha, and the Gemara goes on to explain. So first of all, first and foremost, like we learned yesterday, you deliver the baby on Shabbos. You don't say to the expecting mother, "Yeah, why don't we just push it off? You know, tomorrow." No, you deliver on Shabbos itself. Lo karta sharcha mikan shechotchin hatibor b'Shabbos. From here, you learn out lo karta, meaning you didn't cut. You're allowed to clip the umbilical cord even on Shabbos. You're allowed to wash the baby on Shabbos. And even if that means heating up the water, you're allowed to wash the baby on Shabbos. And finally, you're allowed to salt the baby on Shabbos. Somehow it hardens the baby. Again, I don't know. You wrap the baby up on Shabbos. Do you remember? We talked about this not so long ago, about swaddling the baby and wrapping the baby on Shabbos. Exactly how that's done, you could take a look at Rashi, but these are things that you're allowed to do on baby on Shabbos. If it's mentioned the Tochacha, so that means it's adverse, and that means, of course, that you're allowed to do it for a baby on Shabbos. Hadron alach mefanim. And that is the end of the 18th perek of Shabbos. 19th perek of Shabbos, extraordinarily enjoyable perek. It deals with the mitzvah of milah. Why is the mitzvah of milah coming up now? So, a couple of reasons. Number one, because the mitzvah of milah is docha Shabbos. We're going to learn the drushas over the course of the 19th perek. If I have the eighth day of the baby come out on Shabbos, which means that the baby was born on Shabbos, right? Every time that you have a meal on Shabbos, that means that there was a double Chilul Shabbos. Chilul Shabbos when the baby was born a week ago, and now for the bris, another Chilul Shabbos. But both of them are, as we learned, beheter, meaning that the Torah permits both the delivery and the milah of a baby to occur on Shabbos. And as Rashi notes, the segue between the previous parak and this parak is very smooth, because the previous parak, the last Mishnah ended off on Kuf Chav Ches Amud Beis, with the words, and you're allowed the Chotzar Chei Milah Osim B'Shabbos. That just when the baby's born, you could deliver the baby on Shabbos, and the next week, all the Tzar Chei Milah can be done on Shabbos, which now introduces us to our Mishnah, which is, what exactly can you do on Shabbos regarding Tzar Chei Milah? Okay, now, as a brief word of introduction, here's what's a given. What does milah entail? It entails an excision, a cutting off of a piece of membrane off the baby, the arla, the foreskin of the baby. So that's Chilul Shabbos, right? Obviously, anytime that you create a wound that is going to induce bleeding, so that under normal circumstances would be Chilul Shabbos. What exactly is that? So we can give it a couple of, we can label a couple of things. Could be that it's shechita, it's a subcategory, it's a talada of shechita. We can call it, we could call it salveya, dying. Well, cutting a wound, I understand, but what malacha does it fit under? In other words, it's got to fit under one of the 39 malachas, and maybe it's also part of the malacha of dash. Right? The Rambam said that when you wound an animal, so then, in other words, there's an extraction of blood, so that's a malach of dash. So it could be that's a malach of dash as well. Okay, but in other words, certainly cutting the foreskin is, under normal circumstances, a malacha, but because we're doing the mitzvah of milah, so therefore it overrides the Shabbos. By the way, and it'll be clear as we go through the Gemara, it's only going to be docha Shabbos when the eighth day falls on Shabbos, meaning for whatever reason there's a postponement of the milah, and it's no longer the eighth day, it's now ninth or beyond, that's not going to override the Shabbos. It has to be specifically the eighth day. Okay, good. So that's a given. But now, beyond that, what else can you do for the milah? Let's say, for example, it's Shabbos and we forgot a knife. We don't have a knife. So I have a knife, but I have to carry it from one domain to another. Can I do that? Or let's say even one step better. Let's say there's no knife in town, but I do have some metal, so can I make a knife on Shabbos in order to do the milah? So this is a major machlokus between Tanayim, between Rabbi Eliezer and just about everybody else. And Rabbi Eliezer says that not only can you do the actual meal on Shabbos, but even machshirei milah, even those things which prepare me to do the milah, can be done on Shabbos as well. That's the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. Even melting down metal to make a knife, according to Rabbi Eliezer, can be done on Shabbos. Rabbi Akiva disagrees. The consensus halacha is that's not correct. I'm not correct. That's not the accepted halacha. But rather, only the meal itself is Docha Shabbos, but nothing else can be Docha Shabbos. Okay? That, and we are subscribers to the idea that Machshirei Mila is not Docha Shabbos. I say all that by just as a general overview of what we'll be seeing over the course of today and over the course of the 19th Parak of Shabbos, and we begin. We start with the Mishnah on the top of Kuf Lamed Amud Aleph, Rabbi Elazar Omer. Im lo hevi kli me'erev Shabbos, me'viyo b'Shabbos. So if you did not bring the kli from before Shabbos, you could bring it on Shabbos, miguleh. Interesting halacha, the knife has to be uncovered. People have to see you running with the knife in the street, well, on Shabbos. It's a strange visual. But in other words, it has to be uncovered. Uvisakana. Now let's say there is non-Jewish decrees against the mitzvah of Mila. So it would be dangerous. In other words, it's interesting. We're still going to do the Mila. But to be public about it, we're not going to do. So mechaseu api edim. So you got to cover the knife, meaning put it in your pocket. But make sure that you're accompanied by witnesses. Okay, and we'll discuss what the purpose of those witnesses is in just a moment. V'odama Rabbi Eliezer, now Rabbi Eliezer says another point, which is, Korten Eitzin, Lasos Pchamim, Lasos Barzel, that if need be, you cut a tree down, you make a fire in order to create the fuel, in order to smelt the fire, smelt the metal, and melt it down in order to make a knife, and you could do all that on Shabbos for the purpose of a milah. And Rabbi Akiva says, no. Anything that could have been done before Shabbos needs to have been done before Shabbos and cannot override the Shabbos. So because I could have made the knife before Shabbos, so therefore the knife had to have been made before Shabbos. I cannot make the knife on Shabbos. And if we did not make the knife before Shabbos, so then no good. Meaning we cannot do the meal on Shabbos. Right, it has to have been done before Shabbos. E bai lahu. The Gemara now asks the following question. Time of the Rav Elazar mishum chavuva mitzvah odumah mishum cheshad. Now look, Rav Elazar says that you're going to take your knife and you're going to go through the street because remember, Rav Elazar says that not only is the milah docha Shabbos, but machshirim as well. So that means even if I'm going to be transferring the knife through the street, I can do that as well on Shabbos. Why? Why am I exposing the knife? So the Gemara is going to give two possibilities. Mishum chavuvei mitzvah. Is it because Rav Elazar wants to make sure that people know I love this mitzvah called Mila? I love it so much. I'm demonstrating. I'm holding the knife in public view so that people see. Here I am doing the mitzvah of Mila, and not only am I doing the mitzvah of Mila, but let's think about it. It's Shabbos. You're not allowed to cut on Shabbos. Good. That's for Rishus. But now that I have the mitzvah of Mila, I'm going to be doing the mitzvah of Mila on Shabbos. So it shows how much I love the mitzvah of Mila and how much we, the Jewish people, are into this mitzvah. We'll do so on Shabbos itself. That's one possibility. Or maybe no. Maybe the reason why I'm exposing the knife in full view is because of chashad, because I want to be above suspicion. Meaning, if I don't expose a knife and I cover the knife, so someone's seeing me carrying a box on Shabbos. Well, why is he carrying a box on Shabbos? Now, I know we just learned a couple days ago that everyone has to be down like Avtichos. And everyone should be judging you favorably.
Right.
Okay, good. But in the meantime, however, you, I'm not talking about everyone else right now, we're talking about you. You have to live above suspicion. You cannot do anything that looks suspicious. Okay, everyone else's job is to judge you favorably. But you have to make sure that you're above suspicion. So you can't just simply walk through a box in the middle of the street. Look, it's not just a box. It's a Mila knife. But you have to make sure people see it so that no one suspects that you're carrying on Shabbos. So there's going to be a practical difference why it is Rav Elazar wants you to walk through the street on Shabbos with an exposed knife. If it's Chivav HaMitzvah, so that means it always needs to be exposed. We want to show our love for the mitzvah. And even if I have witnesses who are accompanying me, it doesn't matter. I want to show my love for the mitzvah. But if the reason is because of suspicion, so I feel mechusa shaper dami. If I have witnesses, so then I don't have to worry about suspicion. Because the witnesses will make sure, they will tell people afterwards, oh, you know, he wasn't carrying an item. He was carrying a knife. He's fine. The witnesses are there to put me above any type of suspicion. My, itmar Rav Levi la'amar Rav Elazar el chavuvei mitzvah. So the Gemara gives a very clear answer. Rav Elazar wants you walking with the knife in the street on Shabbos exposed to show our love for the mitzvah. Tanya Me'ach, the Gemara supports this with a brisa. Mi'viyom agulav ein mi'viyom mechus. The Divrei Rav Elazar. The Rav Elazar says you uncover it and you don't cover it. Meaning it's not just that you could cover with Adam. No, you have to actually uncover the knife. Show people the knife you're walking through the street to show our love for the mitzvah. And Ravashi says, you read the Mishnah carefully, it reads in the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah says that in a time of danger, you cover the knife. But that means that if it's not a time of danger, you make sure to expose that knife to show how much mishum chevuvei mitzvah, shma mina, to show how much we love the mitzvah. Tanya Idach, Mivio Megula Mivio Mechusa Devar Avelazar. Another Braisa, the Braisa says you walk out with a knife exposed. Rav Yehuda Omer, Mishum Avelazar, no Agana Bishas Sakana, Shayim Mivio Mechusa Api Eidim. Now during the time of Sakana, when there was a Roman decree, a non-Jewish decree, that we're not allowed to do Mila, then you cover the knife, but only then you cover the knife. You're accompanied by witnesses to ensure and to make sure to tell other people that I'm not just simply carrying an item, but I'm specifically carrying a knife. Now, we said witnesses. We said in the plural. Do you, the carrier of the knife, do you count as a witness? Now, generally speaking, the answer, of course, would be no. Meaning, you can't testify about yourself. But the Gemara is going to suggest that maybe when we say witnesses, what we mean by that is, well, normally I need two for witnesses, so maybe over here, two would be enough, and you can count as one of the two. Iuvechad, Odilma, hu vitre. So is it you and somebody else, or is it you and two others? Tashma v'sakarna mechaseh api edim. Iyamar b'shlamu hu vitre shapir. Ali amart hu vechad, my edim. The Gemara says it sounds like it should be you and two others because the Mishnah uses the word edim. The Gemara says not necessarily shiru'u yalayid b'makam achir. Could mean that when it says edim, it just simply means as a pair. Meaning, look, here obviously you can't testify about yourself. We understand that. But maybe the word edim is used as a very generic term. Meaning that you just need a pair. Like, normally, like witnesses come in a pair. But it could be that you count as one of the two witnesses. Od Amar Rava Elazar. Tana Rabban. B'mkamashal Rava Elazar, yikor temetzal lasos p'chamam lasos barzel b'shabes. In the community of Rabbi Eliezer, they would follow like Rabbi Eliezer. Now I know that doesn't sound groundbreaking. I know that sounds pretty straightforward. But the point being is that even though during his day and age, many disagreed with him, but if you lived in his community and you followed his ruling, great. So you can actually make a knife on Shabbos for the mitzvah of Mila. Sh'Rav Yosi Aglili ayu ochlim basar of b'chalav. And in the community of Rav Yosi Aglili, they would eat chicken and milk. We do not eat chicken and milk together. We do not cook chicken and milk together. Although, to be fair and honest, cooking is chicken and milk is mutter. It's eating chicken and milk that's usher. Oh, okay, for another time. in Rav Yosi Aglili disagrees, and Rav Yosi Aglili says that you're allowed to eat chicken and milk. There's no gzera derabanan to eat chicken and milk together. Okay, again, we don't follow that. That's not the accepted halacha. The accepted halacha is that there's a rabbinic prohibition to eat chicken and milk together. But he did. And not only did he, but the Gemara points out that his old community did as well. Levi ikla bei Yosef Rishba. Levi went to the house of Yosef the trapper. Krivale resha de tavas bechalva. And what was served for dinner? So peacock dipped in milk. Soaked in milk. So that's wonderful. It's also rabbinically forbidden. Lo achal. So Levi didn't eat it. So kiyasal coming to Rebbe. Now Levi goes back to Rebbe. Rebbe here being Rebbe Yehuda Nasi. Amalei amai lo tishamtinu. Well, you know, why don't you put Yosef in chayrim? Meaning excommunicate him. He violated Nisra Durabanan. Amalei asu de Rav Yehuda ben Becerra. Well, he was living in the community of Rav Yehuda ben Becerra. The amina dilma darsh luka Rav Yosef Lili. And I was malamitz chus. I assumed, well, obviously that community falls like the position of Rav Yosef Glili. Did none of the Gemara here provide for us the Mishnah? Rav Yosef Glili, Omer Nam Alos Ochlu Kol Navel V'Nam Alos Vashak Di B'Chalei V'Imao. In Parshas Re'eh, we have two Isurim that are juxtaposed one to the other. The Isur of Nevela and the Isur of Basar B'Chalav. Etch Asa Mishum Nevela Asa Milavash B'Chalei V'Ov. I'm sorry, Bechalav. I could have made an argument, a very good argument, that you're not allowed to cook a chicken in its milk because chicken is subject to nevela. So therefore, there's a prohibition of Bechalav. Tam Lamar, Bechalev Imo. Right now, if it sounds familiar, it should. We just read it yesterday in Parshas Mishpatim. Bechalev Imo, Yasa Of, She'in Lo Chalev Eim. Now, chicken, or birds for that matter, do not lactate. So therefore, there is no iser de araisa to eat chicken and milk, or any fowl for that matter, and milk. Okay, so that's the drasha of Rav Yosef Glili. And by the way, it's we all agree. Meaning, right? There's one opinion. Okay, I think there's one opinion that holds it's an iser de araisa, but we all agree that, in other words, by consensus, nearly unanimously, we all agree that there's no iser de araisa to eat chicken and milk, but we subscribe to the halachic view, which is that it's asa midrabanan. But what Rav Yossi does is he says it's not even an asa midrabanan. And so when Levi went on to describe, why didn't I put Yosef in Chayrim? I assumed he was following like Rav Yossi. There was a city in Eretz Yisrael who followed the position of Rav Elazar, Rabbi Eliezer, regarding the mitzvah of Mila on Shabbos, where not only did the Mila override Shabbos, but all the Machshirin override Shabbos as well. And no one died prematurely, meaning they were good. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was clearly happy with them. And there was another Roman decree about doing the mitzvah of Mila, which applied to the entire country of Israel, but not for that city. That city received a special zechus that it wasn't subject to that decree. Now, you could have made the argument they're lenient in the world of Mila and Shabbos. No, and the answer is no. They're following a Rav. Rabbi Eliezer says that you're allowed to. They subscribe to the viewpoint of Rabbi Eliezer. So, that's... The Gemara says, if you have a Rav and you're following your Rav, you're more than good. Tanya Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer Kol Mitzvah Shekibul Alayim B'Simcha Kegon Mila Dichsev. Now, any mitzvah that historically we accept it with joy, so that creates a halachic DNA within us, where for generations on end, we're gonna be very excited about that mitzvah. The pasuk in Tehillim, which Rashi explains is referring to the mitzvah of Mila. Rashi says, "How do I know it's referring to the mitzvah of Mila?" So Rashi goes on to explain because the pasuk says, "Sas anochi al im rasecha," your word, meaning what was the first mitzvah we, the Jewish people, received before Matan Torah? Correct answer is mitzvah of Mila. So that's im rasecha. So we do it historically in a state of joy. Now, any mitzvah that we accept but begrudgingly, kegon arayos, like the mitzvah of arayos, dechsi v'yishma Moshe ha'am bochel ha'mishpachosav, parshas baloscha, al iske mishpachosav, adayin osin osa b'ketata. To this very day, we fight over the mitzvah of arayos. The Gemara notes, and cannot tell you from my own personal experience how correct this is, Delorama Batigra. Whenever a ksuva is written between two families, there's always going to be a fight. Right? Whenever you prepare a chasna, there's always going to be a fight between the two families. The Gemara says, look, it's historical. It's unavoidable. Totally inescapable. Look, we accepted the mitzvah of Arayus b'ketata and fighting. So to this day, we fight. Any mitzvah that we sacrifice over, the mitzvah of Avodah Zarah, we've given up our life for Avodah Zarah. We sacrificed over the mitzvah of Mila, so it's that mitzvah is strong by us. And any mitzvah that's not strong by us, so the Gemara says, "Bishas Gzeres Hamachus Kegon Tefillin Adayin Merufa Biadam." So the mitzvah is lax by us. The mitzvah of Tefillin is lax. Now, even amongst the most observant of us, how often do we wear our Tefillin? Once a day, Shacharis, Some even have the privilege of wearing it during the daf. But I'm saying, but like in other words, it's a, the Gemara's terminology is that it's lax. When the mitzvah of tefillin is lax, because historically we didn't sacrifice over the mitzvah of tefillin. The Gemara cites proof towards this. Amar Avyanai tefillin strichin gufnaki, ke Elisha ba kanafayim. Mitzvah requires a clean body like Elisha. Mahi Amar Rabbi shalai yafich behem, Rav Amar shalai yishan behem. Should not pass gas while wearing tefillin, should not sleep while wearing tefillin, v'amai kar lo Elisha ba kanafayim. Now all this should sound familiar because this is the Gemara that we saw back on Daf Mem Tes. We're seeing it again now, second time in the Masechta. Shepam achas gzer machas arash gzer yisro shekol aminich tefillin arasho yikaru es mocho. Anyone wearing tefillin, so he's going to get his skull bashed in. Elisha meniach tefillin. Now Elisha would wear tefillin despite the fact that he was risking his life. So you see that Elisha was ready to risk it all. But the observation is, but just Elisha. Nobody else was ready to risk it. Now, this should lead to an important discussion of, you're really supposed to give up your life for tefillin? And the answer may be yes, but not for now, meaning I'm well beyond my time allotment for today, but on another occasion, though, it's an important discussion. So then he sees a Roman soldier, and he's caught with his tefillin, and so he's running away from the soldier, and while he's running away, he's ripping off his tefillin. The soldier gets to him, he rips off his tefillin, puts it in his hands, and the soldier says to Elisha, what do you have in your hand? Oh, what do you mean? I have wings of a dove in my hand. Opens up his hands, and lo and behold. And that's how he got the nickname of Elisha Ba Kanafayim. Maishna Kanfayona. Gemara wants to know, why did he say, of all the things, why did he say Kanfayona? V'lamalei Sharofos, and why not any other bird? Mishum didam yekneis yisrael yona. The Jewish people are like the yona. Shenemar Kanfayona nechba bekesef ve'ev rusel b'yirak rak charutz. The Kanfayona is protected with its silver and its wings. And just like the Yonah with the wings protected, so to the Jewish people, the mitzvahs protect it, meaning the Jewish people. Rashi over here says that the Yonah fights with its wings. If you look back on Tosfos and Daf Mem Tes, actually Tosfos brings down an interesting medrash that says that the Yonah is able to rest one wing at a time while it's flying, so it doesn't need to ever land. It can continuously fly, and that's its protection. Okay. We will pause over here. Two dots. Okay. We did good today. We're still behind, but that was a lot of Gemara that we went through today. I know I went through it quickly. I apologize for going so fast. Continue Rufu Shlema for Binyamin Zeva Cohen Ben Sharon Rivka. And Rafal Zakai Avram Ben Yakir Avigai. Le'ilu Nishmas Mashrapa Mashallah. And Sarabat. Rechanan Yimenakash Amar Tzakash Baruch Hu Zakai Shalafi Chachir Mentor Mitzushan Emar. Anaychal Beitzim Atziko Yadil Tarav Yadir.